And welcome back to Over Coffee. Well, playwright Vicky Ramirez, creator of the new play Standoff at Highway Number 37, is joining me on the phone right now. Her new work has its world premiere next Friday, 1 week from tomorrow, at Native Voices at the Autry. You're invited to come see it. Vicky, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I would love to know a little bit about your story. Can you tell me, please, how your journey as a writer started?
My journey as a writer started, actually, I was acting at the time. And I found it rather frustrating and kind of limiting because I would hear these stories and I would hear more stories underneath that I wanted to go further into. And as an actor, you're basically limited within the parameters of the script and the director and, you know, what you're allowed to do. So I realized maybe that's not the story that writer was telling, but it's the story I wanted to tell. And especially with Native theater, I would do pieces. There were so many folks who wrote pieces that weren't part of the culture, were from outside of the culture. And they would write people that I didn't know. And I thought, well, where were they being up on stage too, you know? So I just sat down and I started writing. That's how I got into it.
And from there, how did you make your journey to become, because I read online that at one point you thought writing was just going to be a hobby for you, and then things changed a lot for you.
I was, I'd sort of given up. I'd started working in hotels, working as a concierge, and I kept writing, but more for myself. I just didn't really know where the opportunities were and saw less and less of them happening, and I thought, okay, well, this will be just something I'll indulge in here and there then and just be for myself or for my friends. And then opportunities, I started working with Amerinda Theater. They started here in New York City because I initially started with Chukola Kolai many years ago as an actor, and that's when we had a couple opportunities and things disappeared. And so I started with Amerinda Theater. And I started writing articles for them, and I'm like, okay, so people are still doing Native theater. It's not as frequent, it's not as happening anymore, but Diane Fair really wanted to push things forward, and Steve Allen actually was really the propelling force behind that. And so we started getting more active, and I started writing pieces, and I had a piece, Smoke, that we did as a staged reading at the Public Theater, and then the Public Theater invited me to apply for their Emerging Writers group, and I got accepted, and things just started really taking off from there. And what's really great about it is it seemed like it was just a kismet, you know. As people were more open to seeing work from Native writers, I started working again, and it just seemed to flow.
What was one of your absolute favorite experiences with the Public Theater?
Other than having Smoke read, I just being in a whole collection of very diverse, funny, I would say exciting, and some immensely talented writers. I mean, in my group, I have Kevin Christopher Snipes and Brandon Jacob Jenkins, Mona Mansour, Alina Smith. I mean, Jordan too. There's so many really good writers that were really here, and we all came from such diverse backgrounds. It was fun to have an exchange and give perspectives and sort of battle back and forth for your points of view, and so that was. The whole experience of being in a room of writers that I probably would never have met and bringing my work to them and having them bring their work to me and just sharing and experiencing the creative process together, that was really exciting. I mean, we saw some great, I mean, I got to meet Jonathan Groff, yay! But, you know, we got to meet lots of interesting folks as well, but that was the most exciting, was just meeting this really diverse group and having fun with them, and we're still all connected now. We still go out and see each other's work and work together as writers, like writers group on our own, even though our group, our year is gone.
It sounds like a wonderful, exciting, creative environment. How did you first come to submit your work to Native Voices?
Well, I've known Randy and Jeannie since I'd heard of them when I was an actor, and I've known them since 1996. My piece that we did as a stage reading at the Public was initially workshopped as a first draft with Randy and Jeannie when they started Native Voices. I think it was the first year that they'd started, or the first year that they brought it to New York City, and they were doing it at the Circle at the American Indian Community House in 1996, and that was the first time I got the opportunity to see other actors working on or doing readings of my work, and it was quite harrowing, but wonderful. And Randy and Judy always joke that, you know, we've known you for years, but then you disappeared. it was a really great experience, but it was just towards the cusp of things winding up in New York City. But, you know, of course, Randy and Jeannie kept it going with their momentum and went to the West Coast. But I, unfortunately, was on the East Coast.
Fast forward to today with Standoff at Highway Number 37 just about to have its world premiere. How did you first come up with that concept?
Personal experience and also just real angry. I had a wonderful opportunity with Amarinda Theater to write a little one act for Ohio Northern University. And they said I could do what I wanted. I could do Native. They just needed parts for their students in it as well. And, so it's carte blanche. I was like, wow, this is great. This is, I get paid and I get to do what I want. Nice. But then Mayor Bloomberg helped. I should actually say thank you to him, send him a thank you note, because it was right around when he made the August 10th, or his August radio show, 2010, where he said that the governor should just get a cowboy hat and go up to the Seneca Nation with a rifle and tell them that this is the law of the land, and they were going to protect the law of the land. And I just, lost it. I saw red after that. And we were trying to get an apology out of him, and he was like, I'm not apologizing. I didn't say anything wrong. Because, you know, it's fine to say to get somebody in a cowboy hat and a shotgun up to the Indians to get them in line, I guess, you know. So I wrote the first draft, which was just, really only the first act. The student, what we did at Ohio Northern was a first act version, very, very simple draft of what we have now. We never went back to the res. It finished, you know, with the climax, the beginning of the second act, or the end of the first act. That's where it finished, and we had a little musical number in there and everything. But, it just made me so angry, and it just flew out of me. And I realized, okay, that obviously was building. But also, my hometown is, my mother's reservation is Six Nations. It is directly adjacent to the hometown where I grew up, and we spent our weekends on the res and everything. But my dad's Jamaican, so we kind of had to move off, but they had a land claim issue there as well, so it's kind of personal, too. It happens a lot with us at the Haudenosaunee Nation and quite a few nations across the country, but I know it happens a lot for us.
I'm still sitting here with my mouth open at that remark. It's like, whew, that just about struck me speechless, and that is not very easy to do.
I just was like, what? Seriously, what? And the best part was him saying, I don't know that I said anything to apologize for.
Wow. So from that rage and from people not taking any kind of notice of your feelings, your rights, and the rights of the people who mean the very most to you, you grew a one-act play into what we're about to see on Friday evening next week. Would you tell me a little bit about the journey from there?
So the piece, when people saw it at the university and when people were like, so what's happening? What happened? It was like, oh, after, and they're like, yeah, what happened after the first act? And I'm like, oh, okay. And they're like, you're not going to leave us hanging. And I was like, I guess I'm not. So I had to go through it and figure out what the consequences really are. And I really appreciated that because I got the chance to really sort of go back and think about where the point of view of the characters comes from, where our point of view comes from, and where it clashes with the point of view at large, like where we don't fit into the outside society as much, where, you know, our perspectives about what country, what land is, what's good use of it, like the fact that people just see land growing and they assume that it's not being used. It doesn't actually have to show the where to be used, people. But, it's just it was interesting. I got to go much deeper into, you know, a little less of the, like, I got to get out from behind the anger, I think. I mean, the anger's still there, but I got to explore more and try to find the more empathetic aspect of it. And it's like, well, I see why you don't understand, but this is where we're coming from.
Let's take a look at how you explore that. What's happening as we are sitting there on Friday evening at 8 o'clock, the curtain goes up. What do we see happening on stage in your play?
Well, we see a land claim dispute starting. They want to be, basically the bone of contention is that the county, the town, are trying to annex reservation land to build a highway bypass because the developer has built a new new development behind the reservation, and it's a high-end development, and he wants his people to be able to get to the highway, have a direct line to the highway rather than have to go around the reservation. And so they claim they found land, that certain amount of land was ceded in 1926, and it should no longer belong to the Indians. So the Indians are there, and setting up a protest as a pretty typical protest, not a whole lot of people. This is just not a whole lot of people. And silly things like, you know, having barbecues, because that's what we do, because we like to eat wherever we go. We always try to find a reason to eat. But then Thomas is there with his unit, which is a National Guard unit, and he is Haudenosaunee, which is essentially the same. It's part of the Confederacy that these people are. We're the League of Six Nations: the Mohawks, Senecas, Oneidas, Onondagas, Tuscaroras, Cayugas. And he's Tuscarora, and this is a Mohawk res. And so he's been dispatched with his unit to quell the land claim protest and keep the Indians from getting too out of control.
So talk about a major challenge here. What kind of a person is he?
I would say Thomas is young. He's idealistic. He's a little bit cocky. You know, he's somebody who's been raised confident in who he is and in his place in the world. And it's only when he gets off the reservation that he finds he doesn't fit. So he's trying to find he's got that innocence about him as well. And that awkwardness outside and wanting to fit, but he's accustomed to fitting, so he's sort of willing to fit at the beginning.
And then he takes a journey, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody because people are going to want to see this, but along the way, what does he learn or what changes for him?
I think he realizes that he has to explore what is the most important to him, what does he value the most, and what he's willing to compromise to be successful in the outside world or to be successful in a general sense. It's like he's been pretty sure of who he is and before this, and sort of went through a couple of years trying to find his way outside of the res, and now he just has to decide who does he want to be known as and how does he want to be. And he has to decide what's most important to him.
And alongside of him, you've created some very strong woman characters. Can you tell me about a couple of those as well, please?
Yeah, well, that's kind of, somebody asked me about that, and I was like, that's inevitable. If you know any sort of, like, Native women is it's kind of almost a stereotype, but they're pretty tough broads, and like somebody asked me, where did Aunt Beth come in? I was like, she fought her way to the front. There was no keeping her off the page. She's sort of an amalgam of all my older female relatives on my mom's side. The very, very smart, very tough, very funny, sort of cheeky and flirtatious older Indian ladies who just won't let things slide and will speak up if they have something to say and aren't afraid to. And so she came out of that. Sandra is an amalgam of the next generation, shall we say, the ones who sort of, some of those who sort of sacrificed a lot and kind of come back and saying, okay, maybe we need to reexamine who we are and what our choice is. And then Baldwin is just that fun young girl who's kind of like, you know what? I don't know that you've had it all that hard, ladies. You know, almost like, I love the third wave feminists, but I also, I'm like, you guys have to be a little more empathetic to the second wave feminists because they really had to struggle. They had to go through a lot to get to where we are at this time. So I had fun with the girls. I like the girls. And Evelyn. Evelyn's newer. I'm still playing with her a bit. But I like Evelyn as a point counterpoint of sort of for Sandra, somebody that she might have been in the past, sort of reminding her of who she is, you know, where she is now type of thing.
I'm getting the distinct impression your audience is going to have a good time, too. Before we have to wrap up, if there were one message that you could get out there through your play, Standoff at Highway Number 37, one thing anybody in the audience takes away with them, what would you like that to be?
Oh, wow. Maybe it's just simply that we're still here and take 5 minutes to listen to what we have to say before dismissing us. Just because we don't have the numbers doesn't mean it's not relevant. We're still very much here, very much present, and very much valid. So we might surprise you. So that's basically, I guess.
And what, I lied, I do have one more question. What would you say that you learned about yourself that was most important as a writer as you were creating this latest play?
That I probably compromised as much as anybody else has to get by it in the modern world. And that it's amazing how many of these lessons come back, sort of, as you get older and you start sort of living your life and exploring things. I learned that I like to entertain people. I don't always like to, I try to avoid political worries, but I'm finding out that I'm a lot more political than I ever let out.
Vicki, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.